Hey everyone, it's time for the Image Doctors Photography Podcast. I'm Jason Odell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
And we are back, believe it or not, from our trip to Cuba. I hope you, we're back. I know we weren't around last week, but we were a little bit out of pocket. And today we're going to talk all about that, or at least some of the stuff about that trip. And that'll be the focus of today's episode, how to go to Cuba and what to expect there. Because we had a great time. We went with some friends, including some of our people who happen to be our patrons, but they're also our friends. But we had a really wonderful experience in Cuba, but it was interesting. And so stay tuned, and we're going to tell you all about it. But first, a few things happened while we were gone that we just want to mention for upcoming. And one of them was software, right, Rick?
Yeah, so DxO put out a new version of a product that we've talked about before, Pure Raw. So this will be Pure Raw 4. And we'll talk more about it probably next week. But functions very similarly to Pure Raw, where it creates DNG files from your images that then get applied. Very good noise reduction, sharpening, etc. And then you use those as a basis for your processing in Lightroom or Adobe Camera Raw, things like that. Works well. And bottom line is, if you like the version 3, you'll like 4 better. But we'll talk about some of the nice improvements in there and how to use them.
We just to put it in perspective, we both immediately purchased it.
Yeah.
So it was, yeah. And I messed decision. With it just enough to see, but. Again, it's if you do any kind of work above ISO 3200, a product like that is extremely helpful for your workflow.
The only thing I'll say is they've introduced a new engine called XD2, and it does not work with Fuji trans X-Trans sensors yet. So if that's what you're using, you could wait a little while, but there are some other nice things in it. Again, we'll talk about it next week.
Okay. And then the other thing was that just the other day, earlier this week, I got my hands on OM Systems. OM System. I keep reading it wrong. It's OM System, no S. Even
though but my OM brain. Digital Solutions.
It's OM Digital Solutions.
With an S.
Right. There's OM Digital Solutions. Anyway, I got an OM
too,
One
too
Mark
hard.
II. I got it. A test copy from my friends at B&H to evaluate. I just literally got all of the settings up, my base settings, because you got to go through every single menu. There's no way to add. You can't copy settings from an earlier camera model to a newer camera model. And I knew that was most likely true. Boy,
it's true with everything else.
It's true with all of them. When you get that new camera with a new model, even though it might be 98% the same, it's going to have a different paradigm, different file settings file structure.
Yeah.
So I've just literally gotten, I've tested a few things, but next week I should have more on this. Partly because I'm looking out my window and I'm seeing about 20 inches of snow that came through Colorado this past week. And so going out and taking pictures of anything right now, other than just plain white
snow drifts, yeah.
Is just not there. But I'm going to test the features, things that we found useful or things that we found interesting in the new camera announcement. And we'll see how those work in the real world. Because it's a case of lots of little improvements. And so we'll see about how that goes. So give me a little time. Give me another week to mess with this camera. Obviously, if you have questions about the camera, the specific things you want us to look for or for me to try, just drop us a note.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you.
Either on our Facebook page, or there's some contact information at our blog, Image Doctors Photo. .com. That's also where you can sign up to become a sponsor. And just to mention, we're going to have a bonus episode, and we're going to go through some more of we'll go through a few of our favorite photos from Cuba. So this weekend, stay tuned for that. You need to be a a patron at the show supporter level or higher. And then you get some other perks with that, but one of the things is access to our bonus videos. So stay tuned for one of those. ImageDoctorsPhoto.com. Now I've turned off my commercial promo voice, and we could talk
This
about
has
our
been a
term.
break from our sponsor.
That's right, which is us. You know, our sponsors are you. You guys help us do this stuff. So this is the good thing. So we'd love to hear from you. In fact, we heard from one of our sponsors just earlier this week. Because at the highest tier, you get some one-on-one critique feedback from us. So we did that with our patrons.
Was
So
fun.
big
I
shout
think
out.
that went well.
Yeah. So you too could have your images looked at by us, and we'd give you processing help and tips. All right. Cuba, huh?
And we know lots of weird things that are
Well,
actually useful.
you know me, that's weird to begin with, right? So, I mean, but let's talk about Cuba. This was something that we actually started planning last summer to do this trip with a few. We wanted to go in a group, and we didn't want to go with random people. So we got some friends and colleagues together, and we arranged a group travel to Cuba. And
It was four couples.
the first thing I usually get from most people is, "You're allowed to go to Cuba." So let's just clear that up. Yes, you are allowed to go to Cuba.
But we went under an approved program, and this is a US thing. Many countries don't have limitations in the same way on travel to Cuba, but it's called Support for the Cuban People. And the intent of it is to funnel money directly to individual families and people like that.
It's kind of like a humanitarian visa without, being quite so complicated. But
And
the
there are expectations that you focus more on cultural activities, the arts, etc. Frankly, that's kind of
That's
like
why
what
you
we
go.
like.
It's sort of why you go to Cuba, right?
So it was an easy fit.
So if you are a US citizen and you want to travel to Cuba, yes, you can do it. There is a special visa that you get, but you can fly there directly from Miami in most cases. We just bought ticket to Havana. When you buy the
Was
plane
easy.
ticket, it says, "Do you have, what is your visa category?" And you have to check the right thing, because there is no such thing as a tourist visa for Americans to travel to Cuba. Obviously, there are the let's just say the relationship between the Cuban government and the US government has not always been the rosiest of things. There's some challenges there, but there's no ban on US travel. At one point, you couldn't fly to Cuba from the US. You had to go to Canada or wherever to do it. For right now, you can still do this. You can travel right directly, fly from the US, super easy. So we spent a night in Miami on the front end just to make sure we were there. Air travel these days, right? And then we all got on the plane to Havana in the morning on and there we were. And
I think we spent more time flying over Florida than we did for the
yeah,
rest of the
the flight
flight.
from Miami to Cuba is like 30 minutes at most. Even though they'll tell you it's an hour and change,
It's quick.
it's very fast. And so we get through. We had no problems getting through customs and passport control. There was just the normal line you just go through, and we got our bags. Everything showed up. That was a nice thing. And we booked our travel through a tour provider, which, if you're going to go to Cuba, especially as an American, you just need to do this. You do not want to travel there as a solo independent traveler, period. Unless you really do your homework. Because in Cuba, again, as part of this humanitarian visa, the idea is you're spending money directly to the people. And that could be the cab operator, the taxi, but it includes restaurants, hotels, whatever. And you
We were
can.
staying in places owned by families,
Correct.
not
Americans cannot.
corporations, not the Cuban government,
So
families.
there are 5-star style resorts in Havana, very high end, very expensive actually, You're not allowed to spend money there. You can't stay there. There are restaurants that may be owned or partially run by the Cuban government. You are not allowed to spend money there. Having this provider, a tour company that specializes in tours for Americans, is the solution here, because they will set everything up so that you stay in the right places. So, what does this mean? It means you have to be a little bit flexible and a little bit adventurous, because you're staying in guest homes, not fancy hotels. And we'll get more into that later. But, we got off the, we got out of the airport. We walked out of the terminal, and what do we see? Just all these taxis that were classic 50s cars pulling up and picking up and dropping people off. It was kind of, you knew that was coming, but I don't think I was prepared for it
I
mentally.
think the number of them surprised both of us. You expect to see some, but there were a lot of them, and
And
you saw them everywhere.
yeah, and these are cars that are in different states. Some of them are truly restored, where people have put, that's their livelihood, and they give tours in the classic, and that's a fun thing to do. Drive around the streets of Havana in a convertible. We did that. That was very, very fun. They restore their cars. In fact, some of them may even have their original engines. However, there's a lot of people who just own these older cars, and they just keep them together with duct tape and who knows what, baling
They may
wire.
have a Toyota engine and
Right.
drivetrain in them that they can be kind of Frankenstein cars, but they're very cool.
Yeah, very,
They
very
are
cool.
very cool.
And so it is kind of mind-blowing, because I think, we go to car shows. It's not like we've never seen a 55 Chevy or something like that. They're You can see them. It's not a problem. You don't see them driving around on the road as everyday vehicles, however.
Yeah.
To me, that was just very interesting. And then the colors, did the architecture, the people, everything was very colorful there. That's what struck out. So we spent, I don't know, we want to give it a recap, but we spent a few nights on the front end in the Havana area. Went to some, we had, again, we had guided tours with transportation, with air-conditioned vehicle. It was very good, excellent. And then we went off to three stops in the countryside, a town called Vinales, which is the tobacco growing region.
Beautiful area.
Very beautiful. We went to a tobacco plantation. We got to watch them, what their process was, making cigars. They even let you try them, which is not a bad deal, because Cuba, right? We went to a town called Cienfuegos, which was very, very good examples of the, it had more of a French colonial architectural style. We stayed there one night, and then we spent two nights in the town of Trinidad, which is very good examples of the
Very cool.
Spanish colonial architecture. So as with all things in the Caribbean, the history of these countries is complicated and involves a lot of stuff that involved, being colonies and slave labor and all this stuff. Then you see the remnants of that, and but it's very, very interesting to photograph.
One thing I will say, and we don't want to take this down a political realm, so we're not going to. But I think it is important for people contemplating travel to Cuba to know that they have some real challenges. They do. And we experience some of those in the way of power outages outside of Havana.
Rolling blackouts, basically.
I'll just say it's really fun being in the shower in the morning, all lathered up, and all of a sudden the lights go out, the water goes off on you, and you're
Right.
standing there in pitch dark conditions going, what
Yeah.
do I do?
Yeah. Every one of the places we stayed in had an AC unit in the room. But if there's no power, they don't work. Some places have generators, some places don't. These are all privately owned things. And
The condition of infrastructure in cities is
right.
it varies a bit. So you, if you're an older person that has a little bit of trouble on uneven pavement and stuff like that, give it some thought. Now, the other side, Cuban people were absolutely wonderful.
Oh my gosh, yes.
They were
Just
wonderful, so friendly
friendly.
and nice. The food was fantastic. There's
And
too much of it.
when they hear you're American, they're like, wow, they really liked that. I mean, they really were we're happy to hear, because they get tourists from Canada, so it's not like you're the only Western countries to visit Cuba, but Americans are less common there. So it was a kind of interesting thing. There's a lot of people who are willing to pose on the street for pictures, and we'll get into that in a minute. Because I think here's the thing: Havana is actually pretty well covered in terms of things like power. There were no power outages in Havana. They have enough generator capacity to do it. It was only when you get outside of Havana. On the flip side, it would be hard for either of us to want to go to Cuba and only see Havana.
Yeah, especially in retrospect, I would not want that. Some of the places I enjoyed the most, well, I would say Trinidad was my favorite.
I was probably up there with me too.
Yeah.
I mean, I
So I would
liked what was
really.
in Havana. Don't get me wrong. That was very cool. But Havana's busy and Trinidad was laid back. One thing you run into is, well, let's just talk about the photography. Let's talk about what we brought, because I think the logistics is, because we went with a tour company, we actually had a very smooth experience.
That helped tremendously.
I just wouldn't recommend trying to do anything on your own, just due to the challenges that they're having now, including things like fuel shortages, power outages. Just
Yes.
so going with a company gets you a little higher priority. They do a lot, and I'm sure they were doing a lot behind the scenes every day to ensure that we could get from A to B on time. And
Right.
if we had been in private vehicles, that would not have happened. It
I
just
don't
wouldn't.
know what we would have done.
We would have spent a few more nights in Trinidad waiting to get gas, I think, is what we would have done. But let's just talk more about, what we brought and what we wanted to do. I think we both wanted to photograph the same thing, right? I mean, in general, you go to Cuba for buildings, the colors, the history, the
The
people.
people.
And so it's street photography-esque, I think it's fair to say, a lot of street.
A lot of beautiful pastel colors, the architecture, a lot of it, especially in Havana, insignificant decay. I mean, some of it in nice shape, some of it barely standing. So there's a very wide spectrum of what you see with the buildings. All have a lot of good photographic potential.
I mean, there are some that were in pretty good shape, and then some that looked like they had, like you were in Beirut or something, had been bombed.
Yes,
Because they're just,
yes.
and it's not because they were bombed, they're just literally falling apart. And
Yeah.
it's a shame, frankly. Let's just talk about what we brought. Because, we went around for quite some time trying to come up with a kit. Your problem was probably more complicated than mine, because I only have one system really to worry about. You have multiple choices, right? For first
Yeah, I'm
world problems.
blessed and cursed.
But what did you settle on? What did you decide? Because we
Yeah,
both had,
Eddie.
we went with a similar kit, just with different brands, right? I mean,
We really did in the end, which was kind of funny. But we were both trying to stay on the light side. We knew it would be hot and humid, which it was, and you don't want to be weighed down too much. So I ended up taking my little Fuji X-T5, and I predominantly used the 16 to 80 f4 zoom that I have some mixed feelings about, but I can make work, and it actually worked well for me on the
And that's the
trip. And then,
equivalent of 24 to 120, right? Okay.
so it's a super handy range. And then I also took a 23 1.4, that's the equivalent of a 35 millimeter lens, and a 56 millimeter 1.2, so that's like an 85. And I didn't always have all three lenses with me. Pretty much always had the 16 to 80. And it worked great. I was able to handle all the things that I wanted to shoot. Maybe I could have used a little bit more focal length at times, but with the X-T5 having 40 megapixels, I could crop in a bit, and it was just fine.
And that plays into what I was going to say, because obviously I brought my OM1. That's my main body right now. And for that, I don't have a 24 to 120 equivalent. I think Panasonic makes one or something like that, but that's not the point. So I brought the 12 to 100, which is a 24 to 200 equivalent. And some of the people we were, our companions traveling with, had Nikon, and they were using the 24 to 200. It's a nice range. And in the case of something like a 4/3 camera, where you're only going to get maybe 20 megapixels, cropping is less desirable. So having the extra reach was handy. Mm-hmm. The other thing, though, I found, and I brought the 17 millimeter 1.8, that's a 35, just like what you had, and a 45 millimeter 1.8, which is a 90, again, a portrait lens.
Very similar to what I took.
Now, here's the funny thing. When you're wandering around on street, unless you're setting up and you're on a workshop with somebody who's, you know, set up a model for you. And these, there are people who do this. It's, you know, they're out
in
there
in Cuba.
Yeah. You know, you're going to photograph ballerinas or something. That's all good. You don't have a lot of time to change lenses, I discovered.
No.
So there were one or two times where I shot with my primes, but had I left them at home, I would have been okay. I think, you know, and those Olympus primes are tiny, so it's not like they were weighing me down, but I could have skipped it. Was 24 millimeters equivalent wide enough, do you think?
Yes.
I mean, I shot a lot at that focal length. There's a few things that I might have shot wider, but honestly, I don't think it was really that important. You know, a few things were interiors, could have gone a little bit wider, but, you know, honestly,
I was fine.
I didn't feel myself missing a super wide zoom or prime. I just didn't. I was just looking at my shots, and, you know, I had, out of like 2,000 shots, I only had about 200 that were with the primes on the trip. You know, I just wasn't using them. Having that zoom to me was key, because you have to be agile. Agility and being able to change subjects, I just wouldn't go there without a zoom.
I completely agree, because there were, it wasn't a static environment, especially with the classic cars, which great fun elements to include in photos. You got almost no warning on those. So a zoom lens was really, really critical. And I would agree. I could have survived without the 35 and 85 equivalents. They were kind of nice for some shots. Mm-hmm. But the thing I couldn't have survived without was that zoom.
Right. Now, did you find yourself, now you had 40 megapixels to play with versus the 20 that I had. Mm-hmm. So did you find yourself cropping in a lot? I mean, we've been back for not quite a week, and, you know,
just a little.
Obviously we've been, you know, looking through. See, I was looking at my shots, and maybe we can talk about this in our bonus episode, but yeah, my shot skewed long. And I said, well, why is that? You know, one of the things you can do when you look through photos is just see where you shot, you know, and people gravitate towards different things. I mean, you probably have a lot of shots that are in that 35 to 50 millimeter equivalent zone, maybe more than I do. I don't know. I mean, that's, you know, we can talk about it offline maybe, you know, or at some point, but I had a significant number of shots that were above 120 equivalent. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, why was I doing that? And the answer was, a lot of the times when you're out on these photo tour, you know, the tours, we wouldn't start until 9 a.m. most cases. So unless you're going out really early, we weren't doing the wide kind of sunrise, sunset stuff. The skies were bright. So I was just shooting more tightly, just in general. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes you'd see people on the street, and I don't want to walk up to them. That's just not my thing. But I was deliberately trying to get more people photos. You know, I really don't do a lot of people photography. Mm-hmm. You know, sorry to the people who want to hire us for weddings, but that's just not really what we do. So I was doing a lot of, you know, sniping from afar. And I could have even used 300, frankly, for some of that. And I've seen in the past with DSLRs, a 28 to 300 was a very good Cuba lens, you know, for this reason. Mm-hmm. I personally, I like having 24 at the wide end. I think you would probably agree that 24 millimeters versus 28 can be super helpful. But buildings, doorways, archway, there was a lot of stuff that was just generally a tighter shot than what you might get with the typical 35 millimeter street lens equivalent. I'll put it in a different way. Like, I know we talked about going to Cuba, what would you be happy bringing? And one thing you said, and we both kind of agreed, was it'd be kind of a cool place to have a trio of primes, or even just, your Fuji X100, whichever version you have, with a 35 millimeter equivalent lens. And you could have done that, but I don't think it would have been as agile as what you brought.
Yeah, it just would have been a different shooting style.
I mean, I just think having the zoom was just too useful in this
That's
particular case.
certainly the way I would go, but I'm not going to say that the other way wouldn't work. You just kind of adjust. You take different photos.
But you wouldn't have gone with a single 35 millimeter lens and called it done. You would have missed shots.
I would have made different shots.
And changing lenses is just a little bit clunky sometimes. You can do it, but like I said, I was glad I had the extra range, but part of that is my own personal style. Just getting things. Few little things that we messed with were because sometimes you just don't know. Sometimes you get snapshots, sometimes you get photographs, and it's okay. It's a trip, right? You have your experiences. What
I will just mention one thing
was gonna
because
say.
it did affect my photography at least a bit. Cuba is not a wealthy country. There are an awful lot of people who will come up to you asking for money. You're just in that environment. And at least for me, it made me less comfortable doing more direct shooting. I did it, and I did the normal friendly, waves to people and stuff like that. But I did have at least something going through my head, feeling a bit guilty, doing a little bit of that. It is what it is.
Let's just say that the people of Havana are not ashamed to come up to you and ask for money if they see you with a camera
No,
and want their
but there
picture
are also
taken.
many people in difficult living conditions too.
That's
So
true.
just realize that.
So what was your favorite? You mentioned Trinidad. Was that your
Oh yeah,
favorite
I
spot
loved
on the
it.
trip? So we were
Yeah.
there for 2 days, did some street shooting. We took some little tours. They have some historical museums that we visited. One thing that was interesting for me, just being American, is that we actually had a little stop on the Bay of Pigs, which you hear about, which was beautiful, actually. It was crystal turquoise Caribbean water. I never thought I would in a million years would have ever visited Cuba or those areas. And it is different when you get, their viewpoints on things might be different than the way you read about things in our history book. So, it's just different. But I'm so happy with the photos that I got. Was there anything you would have done differently, Rick?
Oh, just nitinoid things, and it was just because of the power outages and stuff like that. I was stupid and didn't bring a little power brick, and that would have simplified my life a
Oh, like
little
a
bit at
battery pack?
times. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Little things like that. Photographic equipment, I was happy with what I took. I probably wouldn't do anything terribly different if I were to do it again. There are lots of systems that work. I might have cycled through a different one just for fun.
Yeah. No, I mean, I tried to get creative using the slower shutter speed stuff. I got a few motion blurs of cars that I would have. There's a few spots where I wish we'd had a little more time, but that's normal with any trip. And we did some interesting blue hour stuff down at the seawall called the Malecón, which was a very classic spot, and you can go there and watch sunset, and people are there, but it was cool. I mean, I didn't have a problem, putting a making a donation in the street musician's tip box and then taking pictures and getting close-ups of their hands.
Right.
I tried this. I really tried to take this as an opportunity to take photographs that are not what I know. My glorious kind of photograph is like, oh, here's this architecture, and there's no people in it whatsoever. It's just, this
No,
is
you did much better.
what it is. And I really tried hard. And then
And then I
coming
did
back,
much worse.
oh,
No, it's not. I'm exaggerating a bit, but the thing I mentioned did throw me off a little.
well, but also, I mean, that's where that difference in effective focal length really does come into play a little bit. If you
Sure.
had had something closer to 200, you might have done a few more sniper pick, a little more clandestine
Yeah.
street photography, potentially. I can understand the appeal of that because sometimes you just don't want to go walk up to people. At least, on the other hand, the people were extremely friendly, so they were all very much happy to do stuff in most cases. It's just hard when you see that all. But colors, and we're going to share those a couple of our favorites this week in our bonus video. So, if you've got, we'll talk more about some of the things that came out of this trip from a photographic perspective, like processing ideas and other things like that, in the next couple of weeks. But we will, if you want to see some of our shots right now, the best way to do that is to sign up for our bonus shows by becoming a sponsor at imagedoctorsphoto.com, and we'll have those to share and maybe even some other tidbits for others coming up soon. So until next time, happy shooting.
All right, bye-bye.